Hey everyone, great to have you back. Today we've got Nicholas Topo with us, and he is sitting, where are you sitting, Nicholas?
In the Palo Alto, California. I'm French and I relocated like a year and a half ago.
I apologize about the terrible wine that you have to drink there versus your homeland stuff. But anyway, we won't touch on that now. Nicholas is the CEO and co-founder of Inbox Booster, a platform that uses AI to ensure emails don't end up in spam or promotional boxes of Gmail, Outlook, and Yahoo. The platform serves over 2,000 clients, including Y Combinator, Zengo, and Wisby, and has recently been featured in several articles on Forbes and a few other interesting titles as well. So, Nicholas, great to have you with us today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here too.
All right. So, people might be thinking, why am I talking to all of these folks on email marketing? Surely we should be talking about AI, space related things, but email marketing still has a very important role in marketing and in driving your business forward. So, Nicholas, as somebody who's got a master's degree in computer science, why email marketing?
So actually, email marketing is a part of our activity. What we really do is email in general, and email marketing is probably a third of our customers. Because so let me repurpose that to why email. And email is basically, and that will answer the why email marketing. The email is basically the only open social network. Like, you can email anyone in the world, they will receive that email, provided the spam box. But if you want to email Joe Biden, you can. And there is a good chance that he's going to read your email, assuming that it's interesting what you have to say. You actually cannot really do that with Facebook. You cannot do that with none of the other social network, because there is a gatekeeper. Email, the magic and the beauty of it is there is no gatekeeper, which means that you need to provide, each needs to provide their own, which is basically their spam filter, but you get to decide, and it's very powerful. Also, because it's also very old, because it started in the 50s, it's not anymore like a medium where people are going to collaborate or work with, but it's basically replacing your physical mailbox, your email. You're going to receive job contracts. You're going to receive a lot of administrative informations that are actually critical to you. You're talking about something that's neglected or underestimated, but it's actually instrumental for you. And you're not necessarily going to collaborate on a day-to-day basis with email, but I assume that if your mailbox is, if I take over your mailbox and you cannot access it, and you cannot, and everybody's, you cannot send or nor receive email, and you don't have your history of email, you're going to be in trouble. And things will be difficult for you.
Absolutely. And it is probably one of the social media or social platforms that is loved the least by people. It's underutilized. We don't really use the full potential of it, as you mentioned. And I love the point of being able to reach anybody in the world. That's so true, if you put it like that. So you've pretty much answered the question almost of why, with your computer science degree, you've gone into email, if I can give it perhaps a bigger, more coverall term there. But what was the driving force for getting you into email marketing and not working for a typical AI-driven business?
First of all, when I got started in this industry, there was no really AI business. And the second reason, so I'm from France. And in France, the reason I actually started a business is I couldn't have a good job offer. And at that time, I could expatriate and live somewhere else, which I'm doing now. But at that time, because I wanted to be close to my family, because it was the last years of my grandparents, I wanted to be in France. So after my degree, I left 1 year in Austria, the border with Germany, and then I moved back to France. And yeah, I had opportunities in the UK and in the US, but I preferred to stay in France, and there were no good jobs. I remember I had a job offer at that time. I had to go out of work at 8 p.m. I was going to get paid twice minimum wage, so per month. So this wasn't good. I don't have access to good jobs, basically. So there was no risk in creating a business. And email, and that's why a lot of people are going there, it's also the industry where you can get in without actually money, because to send an email, you need nothing. If you want, for instance, to work on in AI, at some point you need capital to buy those cars. If you want to build something more complex, you need servers with email. You can really start with nothing. And there is also a little bit of beauty in email, and so that because it's not real time, even if your code isn't very good initially, so it's crashing all the time, if you return your code the right way, you can freeze it and fix your bug, and you can still return to the customers who's not going to see anything. So you can work with very limited resource. And in my case, at that time, I literally didn't have any money. I had to find a co-founder to pay for the servers for the first few months. And that was his only contribution. Then I bought him back, but that was his contribution. So I really was dirt poor. And after that, I was able to buy my place in Paris. So it's really working. You can really do anything without capital. And that's why it's very efficient at the market. Like, it's very ruthless because a lot of people are going to try to compete and they're going to copy each other all the time. But that's also why you cannot assure us. There is no barrier to entry, basically, which is why you have spammers and all that.
Yeah. So you mentioned something there about the competitive landscape. Surely this is a very competitive space. It's been going for 50 years. Let's talk about Inbox Booster and exactly what it does, and then we'll go into some case studies and some interesting things.
Sure. I love that. So what do you want to know about Inbox Booster?
For somebody who has never heard of it before and is not necessarily well-versed in email marketing, let's talk about your business a bit about, so you started it on a bootstrap budget, and what was the main service that you started out offering? What was your differentiator?
For Inbox Booster?
Yeah.
So for Inbox Booster, we're basically fixing email in spam. And as far as I know, we're the only one who's doing that. You see, a lot of people are doing, so there are people doing that. So of course there are competitions, but what we do is with the white hat team, if you compare it to SEO, have a lot of black hat people. So they're going to say, oh, we're smarter than this spam filter, so give us money and we'll trick it. So this is called, for instance, a warmer. You have people who are going to do like syntactical text spinning. So you have lots of kind of techniques to try to find loopholes in the spam filter. And you have consultants that are going to sit in a CXO meeting who are going to explain what needs to be done, look at the data, and prepare a nice PowerPoint presentation. But there was no company doing a very concrete saying, okay, you're in spam, this is the reason. And this is what the spam filter wants you to do. So in other words, nobody's going to try to tell you, or at least before us, what does the spam filter want you to do? So how to comply with their requirements. So you could work with Black Hat, maybe it's working or for a time and then stop working. And the other alternative was to go work with consultants who are going to be very, very strategic driven. So they're going to say, oh, you should use social media, or let's look at the percentage of active users, and let's build a plan and all that. So this is very abstract. What we're really saying is you're in spam because of that. So that can be a couple of different points. Could be because either your stack is not configured correctly, which is something we see a lot with HubSpot users, or it could be because you have some of the words are actually sending you to spam of the campaigns you're making. That's another thing we're saying, or because of the past email you've sent through that domain are creating a reputation issue. And just knowing why the spam filter is putting you in spam gives you the mean to actually fix it. Because if it's a worrying issue, you can fix it. If it's a reputation issue, then you can fix it too.
How much money is lost to spam filters a year? Do you have any sort of, you must have a sales pitch on this to customers and saying why they should buy your product. How would you sell to me why I need to buy your service?
So actually, because it's actually technically much harder than it looks. We're not very good yet in marketing. So I don't have the sales pitch, because we're actually selling to people who are in spam already. They're aware of the problem and they know how much it's costing them. First, they want to fix, and then they want these things to never appear again. So that's why they're paying us, which is a very different proposition from trying to convince somebody who doesn't know they have this problem. I don't know how to convince people that don't have this problem. What I can tell you from our competitors' data pitch, because they do that, is they're saying between 20 to 40% of the emails are in spam wrongfully, which doesn't really mean anything, because everybody, even people sending Viagra email, they want their email to be in inbox. I'm not sure. What I can tell you from our experience on Gmail, you have at least, if you look at your spam box right now, for instance, you'll see that in average, one per day is a false negative, meaning it's been sent to spam and shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
And you'll see with your cold emails that I'm sure you're receiving, that you're probably receiving, I would say, 5 to 20 emails per day that you would have wanted to be in spam. Am I correct, or you don't know?
Yeah, you're quite right on that. Mm-hmm. Let's just go back to definitions, because I think this is quite important. Everyone's heard of spam. And we hear the word spam, and then I think we have a very broad understanding of what it is. What constitutes spam? why is my marketing email, which I'm sending from a legitimate business, being sent to a spam inbox as well as that Viagra email? What, or and that Nigerian prince who wants to get his money from me? How does it? How does the spam bot work? How do you? And we'll get into HubSpot and some strategy and best practices. Yeah. But let's just talk about what is spam.
So there are a lot of definitions about spam. There is a legal definition, and there is what spam filters think, which is exactly what matters. Because right now, email is almost a monopoly, with Gmail owning a lot of the consumer mailboxes. So what is spam is what they think is spam. First of all, spam depends on the spam filter. So Outlook would think something is spam, Gmail not. And first step is, who are you emailing to? Are you emailing to Fortune 500? Are you emailing to European companies? Are you emailing to American companies? Or are you emailing to China? By the way, in Chinese, they barely use email. So how does that work? So the first step into that is to understand what you're saying. Assuming you're sending a Gmail, Gmail, what they're going to do is they're going to check, so they'll define spam as an email that people don't want to receive. Sounds tautological, but what they do is they take a sample of your email, so a pinch of your email, they put it in spam box, they see if people complain by not clicking spam. And they check for the people who are actually actively checking their spam box. They do that on that. On another example, whatever, you can do also the opposite, which is they take a picture of your email, put it in inbox, and if people mark your email as spam, then they'll assume that it's spam, enough of them. So the way they're going to define it is going to be user-driven. And there are other algorithms. We're going to try to capture the reaction and say, if enough of my users say this is spam, then this is spam. In other words, for Gmail, spam is what people think is spam. So it's not even so there are legal requirements that are legal side, but it's not even a legal thing. It's really if enough people mark your mail as spam, they'll assume that it's a spam. If enough people, which is a problem, because if you're actually a legit Nigerian prince and you're actually wanting to give away your wealth and people think it's spam, then you'll actually be in trouble, because you'll have this problem. If you send it to everybody, people will think you're actually spamming, you're trying to get your money. They defer this question of what is it to the end users.
Yeah, I've had some very interesting emails sitting in my spam box. I've got a corporate mail, but I use Gmail as the email client. And quite often, mails I should be receiving do go into my spam box. But I have to be honest, it's much better than the normal Gmail inbox, where the just normal gmail.com. where you've got all your promotional filters, et cetera, et cetera. Let's go into some trends and evolutions in the email marketing world. You said it started in the 50s. That means we've got 50 years old. So we've had 70 years or 50 years of email marketing. From the early days to where we are now, there's been obviously some changes. What are you seeing in the next 5-10 years happening in my, and will email still be around? Will you still have a business in 10 years?
So I think we do. So by the way, we wouldn't be trying to build it. But the reason I think we do is because email has been around. So there is this idea that if a technology, there is a law, I forgot the name. Let's say that if a technology has been anything that has been around for a long time, the probability that's going to be around for half of that time is pretty big. And then you don't really know. And that's what you're seeing with email. If you think about it, every device has a mail client, like your smartphone, probably even your dishwasher. So it's probably going to still be there in 50 years, or in 25 years. The second question you can ask yourself is what email is used for. And actually, before answering that, I'm still receiving physical mail. You are still receiving physical mail. There is, in most cases, no need for that. So that kind of answers the fact that will it still be around. And what's really clear is, despite email being here for more than 70 years, you still receive physical mail. Now it's really going down and starting to disappear. But that it took 70 years for the thing to disappear. And it's probably still going to be around, but on a different scale. Another idea. So physical mail, I would say it's not relevant anymore. It's clearly going out and it's going to be phased out. And it's taking time, but it's getting there. Email is different because the way I explain it is, that's what we started the conversation with, is what you received in your physical mail, now you're receiving it into your mailbox. So it's not stuff you want to know about now, okay? So it's going to be invoices, it's going to be government documents, it's going to be promotions. You don't really want to receive them in real time, but you still want to receive them and you actually want to know about that. So there is, and right now, no other provider, like no other messaging system offers that. You have WhatsApp, you have TikTok, you have lots of other channels where you can talk to people, talk probably less, but you can talk to with Facebook Messenger, you can talk with Instagram, you can discuss with text, but that replaces a phone. But there is this kind of asynchronous for a document that stays. For instance, if I have, the way we're passing messages to each other was by email, because we don't know each other very well. And if you send, you're not going to send me a text message, plus everything you're sending me is very formal, something that's in the process. So you want this kind of automation, a degree of automation, and you wouldn't have been able to achieve it with text. And that will make sense because you would have a work in me at 1 a.m. When I receive that text, something that can wait. It's asynchronous. So anything that's a little bit formal with people you don't interact too much with, email is a great channel. And there is no reason why it would change. And if anything, because of the demise of physical mail, it's actually going to increase. And what happened before, though, is you used to receive a lot of emails for things that was not a good channel, for instance, real-time channel, like a real-time notification, invitations. Now, what you're receiving is really it's what you should receive. That's how I would say. And so I don't see that disappearing. What I do see, though, is people sending less. Like a lot of companies who are sending a lot of emails are going to send less of them because there is no need. So instead of sending 5 emails that are, hey, you have an invitation, hey, you need to go on my website, you really need to go to my website, they're going to send you 1 email instead, or 2. That's what I'm saying. And that's the evolution for something you're going to check once per day and not being a tether to.
It's fascinating having this discussion because I don't think people think about how important email is or its impact in our life. And I think in terms of the evolution that you've sketched out, I am receiving much fewer emails. And what's happening is that when these emails do come in, I do read them. And especially with business tools like Asana and Monday.com and Trello and so on, all the messagey type quick emails that we used to get on our Blackberries 10, 15 years ago, those are disappearing.
That was 20 years ago.
Was it 20? Oh. Okay, I'm giving my age away now. The importance of email is just going to grow because it is going to be, as you say, it's going to be an archive of documents, and it's going to be where important documentation or important messages come through. And I suppose that's where your business comes in terms of making sure that important emails don't get left, do actually get into somebody's mailbox.
But we're changing from a time where email was basically like what you call like a Facebook message now or a LinkedIn message, which is something that people don't care too much about. Like it's just, okay, it's an interaction. It's this type of small message, hey, do you want to go to lunch and all that, to, oh, I really want to make you, I don't know you, but I'd really like to make you a really good business proposal, and what I'm selling to you is really important for your business and so on. So to something that you would, and if you look at this analogy, it's typically the kind of things that you would have sent as a formal business proposal, not this time 40 or 30 years ago, where you would have sent, oh, this is my $100,000 proposal for your new whatever, for your new, for a home renovation or something. You would have wanted to send something by physical mail so they could see how awesome you are and how seriously you're taking it.
I wonder if we could have emails that have not a star on it, but you pay a bit extra for an email to be guaranteed to go into somebody's inbox.
That's exactly what we're selling. Basically, if you think about it, that's what we're selling. It's just a little bit of, because that's what's interesting. If you abstract a little bit of this discussion, the thing about email is it's really physical mail. It's really the same thing. And people used to send, so you used to put stamps on physical mail, but initially it was the receiver who was paying the mail, which created a spam problem, which is exactly what we're having now. So the, of course, obvious idea is exactly the same, but it's not working in computer. So what you have to do is everybody has to have a gatekeeper as, okay, you're going to receive a lot of spam, you don't care. That's almost a solved problem. But how do you know what people care about? This is actually a more complex subject, especially in email. It's not the same as on the web. It's a lot more asynchronous. And for instance, again, I'm assuming you're receiving a lot of cold emails for selling you services you don't need. So am I right or no?
Yeah, I just picked up one email now that is in my spam box because we were going to have a chat. And I thought, oh, this is quite interesting. And it's a podcast company that looks quite interesting. And I just did, it was in my spam box.
This should work with us. And yeah. But now, if you think about it, a lot is about the interaction and how do you want to get notified. So for instance, so because you have those different streams of discussion, one is people you don't know about, you want to get notified maybe once per day. And ideally, it wants a summary about something. Two, it's about important documentation that you want to keep forever, tax and all that. And three, it's about people. And that is, this interaction is normal, and that's where we're going, and that's already there. And that's why young people don't have email addresses, because they don't need to. This is why you don't really need to receive any of that. But the older you get, as having a bank account, it's part of the thing that comes with it. You need it, but it's not, and it's poor, but it's the cornerstone of our society, and it's totally underestimated in the sense that, for instance, physical mail is protected in most democracies and people cannot open it. This is not the case with email, for instance.
Mm.
So if you even think about it, it's the same. So there are a lot of open issues that as even though it's 70 years old, as a society, we haven't come to term with that because it's evolving. But the thesis, and that's exactly what you said, is yes, people are paying us to make sure that their email are in inbox. We're going there. And what because of the way this ecosystem or this, yeah, this ecosystem or this network works, there is a company who's going to sell that at a good price for everybody because this is a profit everybody will have. As soon as you want to send an email to more than five people, you will need to make sure that it's hitting inbox.
Yeah. So let's just hope TikTok doesn't open email account system. That would be quite hilarious. Now, let's take it to a real example. I've been sending mails for many years, and I use HubSpot to send out to my email list. And my email was, most of my emails after a couple of months were going into people's junk boxes. And they knew me. My content was fine. It wasn't spam. It wasn't promo. Let's talk about some of the challenges folks have with HubSpot and what we can do about that. Or what are the main challenges people have with HubSpot and how do you deal with that?
So the problem with HubSpot is that it has a huge blind spot with email testing, and it's to the point where they don't want you to test your email. They don't want you to know if you have deliverability problem, because I think it's really, I have a lot of customers on HubSpot, and it's really challenging. They don't have the tools, and they make it almost on purpose. So when you click on yourself a test email, for instance, it's going to be sent. It's not going to be a good test. Like from a deliverability point of view, we'll not know if you're hitting the jump folder or not, because they've changed a lot of parameters to make sure that your test email is going to be in your inbox, but that's at the cost of testing your deliverability. So in general, if you send an email to people, you need to test before. So that's why we built and we've developed a unique capacity to test at scale and to make it in an easy way. You go to inboxbooster.com, it's free, and you test your email and make sure that it's in inbox. And we'll tell you why also for free if you're in spam, so you know what to do. Then you can pay us a little bit of money and we'll help you how to get out of it. But you also can do it yourself. It's really boils down to your 20 pages of our blog post to work it out or yourself, or do you want to give us a little bit of money? We can help you doing it. It's really, but the reason that we do it like that before we go back, it's because I strongly feel this is something that everybody should be able to fix their email for free because it should work. Now, either you trade time or money, but that's what we're giving you as user. You either spend a little bit more time and it's not costing us too much, so we're happy about it, or you're trading time for money and you give us a bit of money and it will be much faster. That's roughly what it is. And then we're not here to let people decide for on their behalf. We're just providing the choice. And that's profitable for us. So that way. But what you absolutely want to do is test. That's the very, very important thing. And you'll see that in a lot of cases, you don't really know if you're in spam or not, because spam filters are super smart. They're going to send your email to you and your friends to the inbox, but for everybody else is going to be in junk folder. You'll see instances of that. And so the first step is test. And now what can happen is you really have three types of problem. We'll tell you what it is on Inbox Booster. Either it's like a DNS plumbing issue, usually, like you haven't configured your HubSpot domain correctly, you haven't connected them the right way. There are still a couple of problems with HubSpot that you need to fix and you haven't done it. We'll tell you what it is. It's just a bit technical, but it takes 5 minutes. The second step is it's really some words of your email that are triggering spam filters. So it's really something that you put in your email and your collateral damage in that case. So you just need to change those email. There is a third case where it's you who it's because of the past history of email, of your past sender history that has created the problem. That's the thorny cases. because you need to either understand why, so talk to read this blog post, or talk to us so you can understand a little bit more. The kind of TLDR version is on Gmail, and on Outlook it's something else, but on Gmail, they have this thing called reputation. So they're basically going to look at your sender history to look if you've been historically sending good emails or not. And if consistently you've been sending bad emails, bad meaning defined as how the users looked at it, then they're going to have a higher, you're going to be more in spam. And sometimes you need to reset that. Sometimes you need to work it out. And the reason is because, say, you're sending all the time really good emails. I'll define that in 2 minutes. And then it's Black Friday and nobody wants to read your email because it's Black Friday in the US. And your email has nothing to do with that, so nobody cares. So that reputation concept is to still put you in the inbox despite the fact that the signal from the user are bad for that precise day. Now, for instance, on the weekend where most emails are not open, it's really business. Another idea, what is good email and bad email? As I mentioned, it's really how people define that. But the way Google and the Outlook are going to figure it out is they're going to check, are my users reading that email in depth? If it's clicking, are they actually touching stuff? Or is they really looking, reading the email or not? Two, are they marking my email as spam or just deleting them without reading it? Or is it ready? Do they stop after that? Do they answer that email? So it's very easy from this kind of metadata to infer the pattern. That's why Warmup doesn't work, because they're trying to mimic this human experience. But they're trying to do that by competing with Google, who's been defeating SEO, black hat SEO people who have been a lot smarter and a lot more well-funded than these people so far. Yeah, it might work, but not for very much time. And if they would be that great, then they would get their $1 million salary from Google to actually work on countermeasure for that. So unless they're paid $5 million per year, then they're making as an individual 5 million, then you can see that there is discrepancy, that there is a rational gives you a problem here. That's basically why. But that's how it's working. So you want email to be in spam. You want email to be read on English. So now in your case, precisely, I don't know what was the problem. And another thing also that's very important to understand with email is that the things are dynamic. Like at some point, people said, don't put free your subject that will send you in spam. This was true, but it's not true anymore. So the question, because those rules are sent away by the spam filter is generating them on the fly, if you want to think about it. So once they've been generated, then they'll have a lifetime and then they're just going to be pruned and rebuilt. So at some point, a specific word can put you in spam. That doesn't mean that in a week it's still going to be the case. Usually it is, by the way, but you have to redo it. So it's not because it's working today that it will work tomorrow. For instance, the reason you've been in spam now is even if I knew it, it doesn't mean that you would be in spam today.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a black box. So it's changing the whole time. And
yes,
obviously why doing that constant testing is super important. We've spoken about HubSpot and how they don't necessarily know what's going on the whole time with your mail. And to your point, it ties into GDPR. It ties into the rules the different countries have with email. I remember where I could, on HubSpot, where I could tell when somebody had read the email, received the email, how much they've read. A couple of those functions have been removed lately. And also with Apple and reading mail on your phones, I think the privacy and the privacy filters and that have been ramped up quite a lot on all of these devices.
Yep. Yes. And that actually answers the reason. There is a GDPR problem. It's not really that. It's really that mail client don't want to give that information anymore. And it's privacy, but they're actually using that information to target you ads. So it's mostly a little bit hypocritical, so that it's data they're keeping for themselves.
Yeah. Now, we've touched on the future outlook, basically, of email. And it's interesting, the amount of emails might actually decrease, but the quality and the value of email marketing will actually increase over time as well. So we might have lower volume. And you're obviously there to take advantage of that. Can you say you've worked with Y Combinator, Zengo, Wisby, quite a few big companies that obviously send out lots and lots of mails. Is there an interesting case study you can talk me through about how you solved a horrible spam challenge that one of your clients had?
Yeah, so first of all, they don't send that many emails, just to be clear. And none of those brands. And I can talk about Y Combinator, for instance. So what happened with Y Combinator is their newsletter was in promotion and spam on Gmail. And so what happened, and that's something we see a lot, is so we put this to our tools, we put that in our newsletter, and they had a quantum problem initially. So some of the words were sending them to spam. What the words were actually had nothing to do with them. It's part of the HTML structure because they actually imported the MailChimp initially HTML template, and they changed a lot of things on top of that. But some of those kind of architectural HTML elements were detected as spam, as a good marker of promotion from Gmail. I guess the rule they had that their AI found is, yeah, if you have that, it's really spam because they haven't worked too much. You're using a default MailChimp template. But it's not just like that, plus sending lots of emails and all that. So what happened after that is that so we removed those words. So HTML tag, we removed them. It was in inbox. It's another email. Then we could see with our trackers that they moved from inbox to back to promotion. So the problem this time was a reputation. So we put it again in our tool, and we call that peeling the onions, because there's usually, when you really spam, you usually have different problems that are stacked. And the second layer was that they had a reputation problem. And that's because until we had talked to them a little bit. And what happened is they were sending emails to people who haven't opened their email or clicked in the last 10 years.
Okay.
So the thing is, it was a setting on their ESP, so their mail system. And you can have that also on HubSpot to just change to just send to engage users. So we told them just to do that for a month or two, and then they'll try to reactivate. And after that, they've been in inbox ever since. And you're talking about people who are actually not really not spamming. This is a branding play. Like they want to play nice to people starting businesses. So those people would apply to YC. They're not really trying to sell because they're actually very selective. So it's really just a branding play. So they don't really care about those metrics. That being said, they had 35% more clicks in total, despite sending less email because of that. So they don't really care, It's interesting. It's worth doing, but it's not a business critical for them. So because that even, and they're one of the top brands in the tech industry. So even them had the problem that they don't know what to do. So it's really going to talk to everybody now. So that's the case study. And you have to spend a little bit of time to fix it. And you need to know what's good enough. Now, speaking of that, with YC, another interesting thing is they're still in promotion on Outlook. But we looked a little bit at the data with them, and they didn't really care because they would have gotten like 5 or more or so more clicks, because most of their users are in Gmail, because it's like Combinator, it's very startup people, they're all tech, so they're all using Google. Almost none of them were using Outlook. So the interesting bit here is, one, expect a couple of different problems to solve and not a one try fix. So give it a few weeks. Two, you need to know what you want to fix also. That's important. So we first need to know where you have problems. And the second thing is where it makes sense to fix, because being in promotion on Outlook in this case was actually not a problem. And so you need to be strategic about it. And three, you need to give yourself time and understand that that it happens to everybody. It's not because you're actually, even if you don't care, like in their case, you will still have the problem. You don't care, so that you don't really want to maximize, milk this medium channel at the most possible. You might still have problems. So it's still worth, it's really worth checking for everybody. And that's your example you've been saying about you've been using HubSpot and you've been in spam and you don't even know why, and you didn't do anything wrong because you are not trying to spam or anything.
Yeah. And I think for companies like myself, knowing that there's a solution, a solution to this problem is very useful, because where do you start? You can't call, if you speak to HubSpot, they can't really help you. They might give you some pointers, but they can't tell you, well, it's actually because of these 5 points here. So I'd be very interested to go a little bit more in depth on your product and have another chat one day and say, okay, let's do a case study. So the last thing I want to talk about is the future. So you've done some interesting work now. You mentioned right in the beginning that when you did your computer science degree, no ChatGPT, no Bard, no Copilot, none of that. How do you think AI is going to impact your business going forward, or any new ideas of businesses you might have?
Everybody's saying AI is changing everything. The thing about email is both old and new, in the sense that if you think about our job, it's really to explain what AI, which are spam filters, are doing. Those are basically very smart AI. They're learning continuously. In some ways, they're ahead of what you would have with ChatGPT. So our job is really just to explain your decisions so a normal human being can do something about it. So it's really that. So we're already there, I would say. In the case of email, I'm not sure it's going to change that many things at this point. For today, yes, it will. And in the case of business, I think it's a great time to start a business. That's how I would look at it, because you can do a lot more things for much cheaper. Like, for instance, it's a very silly example, but I'm not a native speaker and I don't really like writing in English because my English is not that great. But it's with ChatGPT, and I'm annoyed to ping an editor to revisit my copy just because the interaction in find someone, they need to check and all that. So it's a little bit, high maintenance of the right word, but there is a little bit of friction. ChatGPT is going to do a good enough job of that for probably, it's not even a money thing, it's just an interaction. So it's making a lot of things that used to be harder, very easy.
Yeah.
And as a business, as a founder or an entrepreneur, you need to do a little bit of everything. And so you get this possibility that used to be very painful before.
I was using a fantastic platform called Runway ML today to do some edits on video and images. And it's just, the market is just moving so quickly. And because I teach in digital marketing, trying to keep up to date with all of these changes in technology is quite tough. But the fundamentals, I think, that you learned in your data science degree are still applicable now. Nicholas, it's been fascinating chatting to you. And I love the subject of email marketing, because every time I speak to somebody, something new and interesting comes out. And I love that you talk about, yes, we might have fewer emails in the future, but the quality of them is going to be better. It still has a place, and that there are solutions to solve spam problems if you are sending marketing mails and they are getting stuck in somebody's spam filter. So thank you so much, Nicholas, for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Come chat with Nicholas. He'll listen to you. Then he'll laugh and then he'll cry with you. It's all in a safe space for you to speak your truth. Oh, come and chat with